This morning, I'd like to focus our attention on the first reading and the gospel passage you just heard. For both readings taken together lay out for us very nicely a blueprint for understanding God's law and what that can mean for us and the freedom that it promotes. Now, normally speaking, when we think about laws and we think about regulations, there's a side of us that always tends to think that the more regulations and laws there are, the less free we are. We tend to look at rules and regulations as things that restrict us, that prevent us from what we like to call freedom, from doing what we'd prefer to do. But the first reading reminds us that there is a significant difference between the law given by man and the law given by God. In other words, God's law is oriented towards authentic freedom. Following God's law, Moses says, has two components or two facets of it. It produces in us two fruits. The first is that it's a sign of God's favor. In that first reading, we hear that Moses says, what all of the other countries around us, all of the nations and tribes around us will say, how special, how unique is this people, these Israelites, that God would be so close to them as to give them his law and to place it in their hearts so that they might follow it. And then the second aspect of it is that by following God's law, not only do we see God's favor, but we also see it as a sign of our wisdom and intelligence if we follow it. Now, that is at complete variance. In fact, I would say the antithesis of what the world teaches. For example, if you're a devout Catholic and you're practicing your Catholic faith, and by God's grace do your best to follow God's commands and to keep his law, there are those who, when they reject God's law and they have abandoned God's law, they like to fancy themselves as enlightened or liberated or free. Many times I talk to fallaway Catholics and they talk about their Catholic upbringing as a vestige of their past, something they eventually grew out of because they wised up and realized that by being a devout Catholic and following the teachings of Christ and the Church, it was just keeping them down. And we see this all the time in the media. How often do we see so-called Catholics who espouse positions in government and public policy that are the complete opposite of what the Church teaches and fancy themselves as liberated or enlightened? Persons who have gone beyond the dark ages of the Church's teachings and actually now live as modern, progressive people. They fancy themselves as true champions of freedom. A great perversion, really, of what true freedom is really all about. As I said, the book of Deuteronomy tells us that true freedom comes from following God's law. Or you can take it to a much more basic level in your own sense of right and wrong. Many people today in the society that we live in reject what we like to call as Catholics guilt or a guilty conscience. And so many Catholics today wish I didn't have a guilty conscience about something. And they look at having a guilty conscience as something of a burden. But in fact, I like to remind such people that when they have a guilty conscience or they feel guilt about something they have done, which they perceive to have been wrong, I tell them, that's good. I'm glad you feel guilty. But say, oh, Father, why? It's so terrible. No, because guilt in the conscience is actually what prevents you from doing even greater evil. It's a check. It's something that stops you. It makes you take pause and say, should I keep doing that? Should I have done that in the first place? But of course, we're surrounded in a society by people who tell us that in order to be truly free, reject a guilty conscience, you just got to be you. You just got to do what you feel is right. The conscience that is guilty actually is a blessing from God, because it actually reminds us of ultimately whose law, His, that we are bound to, that we must follow. I get much more nervous about a person who has no conscience. Think about all the recent killings that we've seen in our country. And I don't mean just in the last 3 months, but go back as far as Virginia Tech. Go far back as Columbine. Go far as back as 9/11. Think about all of those individuals who perpetrated such atrocities. If they had a guilty conscience when they were deliberating about what they were going to do, how many of them might have stopped? How many lives might have been saved? Because it was a guilty conscience that said, don't do that. But in fact, what we hear so often out in the media, and that largely colors our secular society and how we think, that if we abandon our conscience and we have no conscience, then we are truly free. In fact, we discover, sadly, that many persons who've abandoned a conscience and no longer want to live under God's law, which is where a guilty conscience often reminds us what it is, they actually are not free. They eventually become slaves to their own passions. And they spend the rest of their lives trying to devise ways to get around the guilty conscience and to promote what they think will make them happy. The book of Deuteronomy reminds us that, in fact, what will truly make us happy, what will truly make us free, is following God's law. That takes me to the gospel. Jesus reminds us in the gospel today of one very simple fact, that following God's law cannot simply be a product of mere externalisms. What do I mean by that? God's law cannot simply be something that is just external to you. Things you do. In other words, you obey, but grudgingly so. You follow what the church teaches, but you don't like it. And you don't like it so much that you'd never try to stop anyone else from doing something similar. I mean, how often do we hear people say, well, I believe that taking the life of an unborn child is wrong, but I would never expect anyone else to follow that. That is not someone who loves God's law, because someone who loves God's law has it on both counts: external observance rooted in internal conversion. The gospel reminds us of what defiles. Jesus goes through this whole litany of things, these that come from people's hearts: evil thoughts, unchastity, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, licentiousness, envy, blasphemy, arrogance, and folly. All these evils, Jesus says, come from within, and they defile. Sin always starts in the heart. It always starts internally. What am I going to give in to? Whose law am I going to follow? Who is the center of my life? The ego, myself, or God? Who is the creator? Am I the creature? Or do I have that relationship in reverse, therefore disordered? Who's the ruler and king of my life and my heart? If it's Jesus, then this entire litany that our Lord went through in this gospel passage this morning would become so foreign and distant to us that we wouldn't even consider doing any of these things, because we have God's law rooted in authentic freedom, rooted in our hearts. The goal then of obedience is not just to follow it externally, but it is to embrace it first internally. If we have that orientation correct interiorly first, external observance of God's law becomes much more easier to accomplish. And so being bound by law, as it turns out, isn't such a bad thing after all. But let us be clear. Back to my original point. When we think about law, when we think about rules and regulations, we often think that these are things that restrict us or impede our unabated desire to do whatever we want. It depends on who the lawgiver is and what the law is. We need to have the confidence that God's law is always oriented ultimately towards our good. Man's law needs to be critically examined. It needs to be discerned. Is this ultimately going to lead to my salvation or not? Because God, who is the ultimate lawgiver, he who can neither deceive us or be deceived, is a true source and fount of all wisdom and intelligence. We ought to pray today that as we strive to embrace God's law in our hearts and to let the work of our hands demonstrate this internal observance, that we will experience the freedom and liberty of living as God's children. O Mary, conceived without sin,